Sounds True presents Sacred Contracts with medical intuitive and the author of Anatomy of the Spirit and Why People Don't Heal and How They Can, Dr. Carolyn Mace. And now, recorded in front of a studio audience, Session 1, What is a Sacred Contract? With Carolyn Mace.
What is a sacred contract? A sacred contract is an agreement you make with the universe before you're born. The agreement is based on this paradigm. I want you to imagine that before you were born, you had an opportunity to discuss with a team of guides how you would serve humanity and yourself in a lifetime. And after that agreement was made, you began your descent into physical life. And during that descent, your spirit began to divide itself into different fragments. Those fragments found their ways into the, let us say, the spiritual containers of other people, for them to hold on your behalf. It's with these people, then, that you have your contracts. Because you don't have contracts with everybody. Your contracts are very selective, and they're very specific. You have contracts with certain people. You have contracts to be certain places. You have contracts to accomplish certain goals. You have all of these contracts which combine together, I want you to imagine, form an enormous solo, single sacred contract. A sacred contract is an agreement you make to be a part of the creation and the manifestation of some part of life that will enhance the awakening and the making whole of your spirit and serve the whole of life at the same time. Now let me angle that yet again. Contracts are based on or a reflection of the process of creation. This is a planet where free will comes together with destiny. We do have choice on this planet. But we also are destined. We also do have promises to keep, places to go, people to meet. That's not an illusion. You really are scheduled to meet people. An agreement you might have with someone, a contract you might have, might be to get together with someone because that person has the chemistry, has the certain electricity that brings out in you a part of yourself, a talent that you didn't know you had. You meet that person because it's exactly that soul who has what it takes to activate in you a desire, a burning desire, to fulfill a part of yourself that never knew you had what it took to want to be an artist. You have a contract with someone who can wake up that spirit in you. And if you look back, not everybody could do that. It was that one person. You have a contract with someone else who brings out in you a shadow, one aspect of your shadow, who makes you look at something in yourself that you never realized that you could be competitive with somebody who seems to have a talent you don't have. No one else made you feel this way. You have an agreement with that spirit, with that person. Now, I want you to imagine before you're born that you're a soul. You're not a personality. Contracts are very baffling sometimes, but only to the personality that would like them to be logical, because the one thing they're not is earth logical. They're spiritually logical, but they're not earth logical. And that's by design, and this is the reason. A contract is meant to challenge you in terms of how you want to control and order your physical life. Because left to our own devices, we would make all of our choices in life based upon our need to control our external world because we're afraid of life. We're an interesting species. We're afraid to live and we're afraid to die. And we're afraid of everything in between. And so most of the choices, if you look, that we are prone to make in life are almost knee-jerk reactions to wanting to control the outside and what the outside is doing to our inside. So we want everything to be controlled, logical, and orderly. Well, every one of your contracts, let me say, challenges every part of you that wants to control your outside world, and that's why they are not logical agreements. They are completely illogical at the earth level, but divinely logical from the spiritual level. And here's an example of that. If you look at your life, how many times have you had an experience that in the moment struck you as being completely unfair or fully irrational or completely out of your control? You planned everything, only it happened this way. You didn't see this side coming. Or how could this be? Only to find out 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years later, it was the best thing that ever happened to you. Surely you can remember one of those experiences, and maybe you can remember 10 of those. But if you really sat down and thought about it, your whole life has been charted by those experiences. And those experiences are contracts. These events that happen that seem to come out of the blue, who organized them? Where did they come from? Who made somebody come in and suddenly disrupt your life? And it looked so horrible at the time, only to find out it was, from a spiritual point of view, the most wonderful thing that could have happened to you. Now I want you to picture something entirely different. I want you to imagine you haven't been born yet, and that you're sitting with me, and I'll be your angel. And I'll say to you, well, what is it you want to do in a lifetime? Now, this is where we're going to get to the core of a contract, where you actually script it. And in the core of that contract, would you say, well, in this lifetime, I want to start a business. I want to start a healing center. No, that's the kind of thing you do once you get to the earth. From the non-physical, eternal, vast, huge soul level of life, that's not the kind of choice you're going to make. That's what's going to manifest as a result of the choice you make. So let's get you way up as high as you can go to the biggest possible soul level of your imagination. I want to stretch your imagination like taffy. I want to pull it across a cosmic spectrum as large as I can possibly get you. And from that point of view, I want you to imagine you and me. I'm your angel. I've got you on a cloud. And I want to talk to you for a minute, and I'm going to say, here is the vastness of your spirit. I'm going to give you yet another opportunity to incarnate. What would you like to be? How do you want to become? Not just be. Put the word become in its place. What do you want to learn? Not just learn in terms of spelling, reading, and writing. How do you want to divinely absorb the very process of creation? You are going to be a part, a vessel of the flow of divine thought into form. This is what life is. It's the experience of becoming a vessel of divine thought into form. This is what life is. It's an experience of creation. How do you want to vessel that force? And that's exactly the language I want you to think. You are going to vessel the force of creation. Now, that is a great, big, huge visualization. And you are going to take that visualization and you're going to think, how do I want to vessel divine creation in such a way? And here's how you want to think. You want to think this way, in such a way that it serves the whole creative evolution of humanity. That is great, big, huge. Part two of that is that it serves the creational force of your own personal spiritual evolution. Now, from this grand, taffy, huge, pulling, cosmic point of view, you are not the personality who's baffled by the life you're living, has questions about the life you're living. The personality is wondering, where should I go next? What should I choose next? In fact, what have I been choosing all along? In fact, how did I get here? But just for now, I want you to come with me out of your bodies. I want you to leave your bodies alone for a while, and I want you to ascend with me as high as you can. And I want you to imagine that you haven't descended yet. You haven't incarnated yet. I want to just scoop you up. And in this position, I want you to just imagine with me that you're not physical yet. Just picture with me that you're just floating. You're floating. You are not who you are in this lifetime. You're floating. You are feeling so light and so unhuman. You're just feeling, and you can visualize the earth so tiny beneath you, so itsy bitsy that you can hardly see it now. And you are eternity in yourself. And the very thought of having one lifetime is so brief, so in the blink of an eye, that when we go about carving your contracts, no matter what they are, they seem like a blink of an eye, because that's really truth. It's true once you incarnate that they feel longer. Yeah, that's true. But it's truth that they're no longer than that. So your spirit is going to make choices that make sense from the spiritual blink of an eye point of view, from a spiritual holographic point of view. Here, as we sit as a group, all of you and me, the hologram of life makes sense. I can grab you and hold you up here, and I can say, I want you to imagine that you are connected to every soul that has ever existed. And from the non-physical point of view, you know what? You can feel it. You can see it. You can absorb it. It's tactile. It's tangible. That's real. You can spread your wings and spread your psyche. And you know what? You actually really fully can feel the connection you have to every single being that has ever existed. You can feel that butterfly effect that says one butterfly can move the whole. You know what? You are that butterfly. You can. From up here, you can actually feel the reality that one of your precious thought forms that you are going to incarnate, holding in your spirit, can truly, truly be that mustard seed that moves the mountain. It makes sense up here. Up here, you really are that force. So when you say, you know what? I think that I will accept a contract to be part of the melting down of a destructive perception on that planet. I will have a contract to be part of the destruction, the meltdown, the reshaping, the recarving of the perception that all people are not equal. I will be part of the reconstruction of the truth that we are all equal, that we are all one. What happens then when you accept such a contract? Do you know that from the cosmic, huge, holographic, massively huge spiritual point of view, that's a major contract. That's not small. That's huge. To be part of the dismantling of a perception. Do you know when you descend and you squish your spirit into a body, you've got to squish real tight. And the body has to kind of squish eternity out of your spirit. Do you realize that? That's what happens when physical form meets the spirit. You got to squish time out of it like wringing water out of a rag. And what happens is your spirit has to go through a process of forgetting the agreements. Another way to think of it is that your spirit has to go through the process of diminishing or shrinking the agreements into a size that doesn't intimidate you. In fact, into a size in which you can't believe you'd have an agreement with something that tiny. That should be your first clue that the agreement's enormous. Because now let me take a moment, just a moment, to share with you, where am I getting this information from? Where does this paradigm of reality come from? How did I come to these conclusions? Did I make them up? Well, I'm capable of that. But no, I didn't. Let me back up, and before I tell you how it is you've scripted your life, I'm going to tell you how I figured out that you scripted your life. You all know that I've been doing readings for years and years and years. And readings evolve. I first started with reading your health physically, and then, of course, it got more sophisticated, and it began to include reading a more sophisticated profile of your psyche and your spirit, etc. Then it moved into reading archetypal patterns. At this point, when I got to reading archetypal patterns, a deeper perception began to emerge. And that perception was extraordinary. It seemed that your connection, our connection to an archetypal pattern, was a very sophisticated merger of forces. First, let me define an archetypal pattern. It's a universal understanding, a universal pattern of consciousness that we all recognize. As an example, let me use the archetype of the rescuer. Most people recognize the rescuer, a need to help people, to jump in, to be there, to rescue. That is an archetype. If I said to you, this person is a natural rescuer, or that person is the perfect mother, I don't really have to define that. You recognize that's an archetype. So let's go back to readings. When I started to see that people had archetypal connections, the next thing I noted was that these archetypes were very specific. They weren't random, and they were different. People had different archetypes, different patterns. That they really quite specifically seemed to order your life. When I saw that that repeated itself in every single person, I had to step back for a while, and I started to take notes and look in a very research-oriented way. I could understand that we made agreements with, you know, where we were born or when we were born. That makes sense to me. But did we make agreements to actually be with certain people? I mean, did we make an agreement to be married or to be single? Did we make an agreement to be part of a war or be part of a peace movement? And did we make an agreement to start a business? What about, do we make agreements to be murdered by someone? That's an outrageous question, but it's a valid question, because you can't say that, yeah, I have an agreement to become a great opera singer. But how do you explain shadow contracts? Are those agreements as real as these? Well, the answer is yes. And all of it's worth investigating. Do you have an agreement to get financially wiped out? That's a real question. And these questions have been asked of me, oh, I don't know how many times. And they need to be investigated because these are the paradoxical questions that form your life, that make you stop and wonder, who's in charge of your life? And do you have agreements that determine your life? You know, part of the greatest suffering I see in people is that feeling that you have been left wandering on the earth without a direction, unguarded, unwatched, left to your own devices. You have no idea how not true that is. You have no idea how in those moments, in your moments of greatest chaos, you are being watched more intensely with more loving focus than you can possibly imagine. And you could say to me, Carolyn, how could that be? Well, I'll tell you how it is. Because in my readings, I've watched how these moments, these times, these hours, these months of stillness are required because what happens in that time is that you are reshaped, you're resculpted on the inside in such a way that you are molded so that you ask certain questions, so that you surrender, so that you're willing to cooperate with the next stage of your life. These are difficult moments, to be sure, but I'm promising you that they have a beginning, they have an end, and they have a purpose. So when I was doing these readings and I was taking notes on how many people have these archetypal patterns, realizing we all do, I came to the conclusion that our lives are so well ordered that we must participate in some way with the ordering of our lives. And that's when I took my sights higher than even the archetypal realm and into what I would call the divine beginning, the point of divine beginning, the point of our descent. So back we are to the point of descent. And you've said to me, I'm your angel, and you've said, I want to study, I want to investigate, I want to absorb, I want to practice creation, I want to feel creation, I want to learn creation through forgiveness. And I say to you, that is fabulous. That is so fabulous, you are gonna love it. And so now, once we agree on that, I have to send you off to have lunch with the guardians called necessity, choice, and compassion. Now, these three guardians, what they're going to do is they're going to talk to you about what your life has to look like, how it has to take shape, who you have to meet, who you don't have to meet. You're going to shape your life now. So you go in and you sit down and you meet necessity. And necessity says, I see your papers here. You want to deal with forgiveness and you want to discover and you want to create with forgiveness and you want to work with it. You want to heal with it. This is fabulous. This is what it means. In order to learn forgiveness, in order to absorb it, you are going to need someone to forgive. Because this is not something you learn off campus. You know, like this is not a right away lesson. You are going to have to interact and integrate lessons of forgiveness right from the core of your own life. So you're going to need to work with somebody. In fact, many bodies. You're going to need people to do something, say something, be something in your life that's going to give you something to forgive. So then I'm going to say, wait a minute, let's see if we can find some souls who agree to do that. So then I have a timeout and then I walk out of the room and I come in and now I bring in a bunch of souls, all of whom love you. All of you love each other, but it's not personality love or earth love. You'll deal with that when you get to earth. This is great big huge cosmic love. This is eternal love. This is the love that comes from recognizing all is one, from recognizing that if you enhance your understanding of forgiveness, you're doing that as much for me as I am for you. That what we do together, we do for each other. That there's no such thing as you or me. There is. Now, this is fascinating. We do have separate identity while being all one simultaneously. What a bafflement. What a puzzlement. Curiouser and curiouser, but that's the nature of divinity. It is curious. We are fully ourselves while being fully each other simultaneously. It's a wild thought, but it's truth. It's absolute truth. It's so truth that, and I mean truth, I know it sounds like I just slipped on a banana when I'm talking, but I don't. I make up words as I need them. So it's a truth. And here, at this incredible level, you're sitting with spirits, with souls, that we've known each other for eternity and eternity. And now we've got, and you say, we're all going to incarnate together within, oh, I don't know, 10, 20, 30, 50 years with each other. Who's going first? Who's going in the middle? We got to organize this. And so you're talking to each other, and one says to the other, what's your lesson? And you say, I'm going to deal with the nature of creativity in this lifetime and talent. And I'm going to deal with helping to learn, to study, to enhance my spirit with creativity. I never really got a chance to do that. And I'm going to help other people. I'm going to whirl around and be a vessel of that energy. And you say, I'm going to be a vessel of the healing energy of the nature of forgiveness. You think that's fabulous. So we're all talking to each other. Now, who can work with who? And I say, you, Miss Forgiveness, you're going to need someone to forgive. So who loves this spirit enough to give this spirit something to forgive? And you have 6, 7, 8, 10 volunteers said, I love you enough so that I'm going to incarnate and I'm going to give you something to forgive once I get down there. And you say, that's fabulous. How generous, how wonderful. So you schedule this. You pull out your little schedule books and you say, when do you want to meet? And you think, well, we can do this a couple of ways. What couple of ways? What do you want to do? Do you want to work together? Do you want to be partners in life? How do you want to do this? Do you want to think I'm your soulmate? That's always fun. And you think, well, okay, I'll put you down one soulmate. When do you want to meet? And you say, well, what about, I don't know, what about when you're 26, 27? Well, pick one. All right, 26. All right, that's great. So you kind of like make note of this, all right? And you start putting together things, experiences, meetings, personalities, dates, schedules by necessity. Let me go on a little further here, because necessity can sometimes take interesting forms. Let me give you yet another example. Let's say that you said, you know what? I think my spirit in this lifetime might benefit, might enhance both myself and the whole by being a vessel for inspiration. And you think, that's fabulous. That's fabulous. Okay, that's good. That's good. I like that. Another one says, I want to bring a lot of healing to the planet. I want to be part of the healing crew. And I think, all right, I've met a lot of people who I think are part of the healing crew. I think I've met a lot of people in my work who are part of on a spiritual mission, whose role is to enhance the transformation to a more spiritually aware planet. I would say that I've met a lot of people who have contracts in that way. I think I've met a lot of people who have contracts under the heading of forgiveness. That's why I'm using these examples, because these are the ones that I think I've interacted with. And I've interacted, obviously, with thousands, and I mean thousands and thousands of people. And I have to say that I believe deeply all contracts begin, their very beginning core point is in this language of saying, I have a contract with the manifestation, the energy of healing, compassion, hope, generosity. These might sound like they're vague words, but not as you follow me down the tunnel of descent, the channel of descent, and you see how they manifest, and you see the power of what these forces do, you'll realize these contracts are not small. They're phenomenal. So now then, let's go back, and you decide, I want to be inspiration. Well, let me use two people who might just have had that very contract. And the first one would be Helen Keller. And this spirit might have said, you know what? I want to be part of inspiration and evolution. I want to help people become inspired and awaken them to the truth that because a person can't see or can't hear, does not mean they're handicapped. It does not mean they can't learn. It does not mean they're useless. It does not mean they're freaks. So necessity says, what an incredible contract. So by necessity, you're going to have to be blind and deaf. And this spirit says, oh, I don't have any problem with that. Yeah, that goes without saying. That's fine. Yeah, I can handle that. By necessity, you're going to have to be born in Alabama somewhere around 1887, 1886. Yeah, no problem. No problem. You're going to need a teacher. She's going to need a teacher. Another soul comes up. Here's one that says, I wanted to serve in this lifetime. I would like to serve in the way of healing this illusion and bringing to bear the value of human life and that all of life is valuable. This is a match. This is a contract. This is perfect. So Annie Sullivan says, let me go first. I got to be older than you. And the angel of necessity says, you know what? In order for you to serve Helen, to become this profound, profound contract, you yourself are going to have to deal with blindness. You yourself are going to have to experience what it feels like to be harmed by the world because you're blind. You're going to have to feel that pain. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to feel the pain of another, and you won't be able to motivate Helen as much as you're going to have to motivate her. You need to be strong, and that strength has to come from somewhere. So this has to be one, just one, of the contracts you're going to make. And she said, all right, I can do that. This is the guardian of necessity talking. Now, I'm walking you through, just to be clear, one of the core contracts of Helen's life and of Annie Sullivan's life. Obviously, Helen had contracts who her mother would be, Kate, who her father would be, the captain. You have many contracts in your lifetime. You just don't have one. You need a number of people, a number of places to fill you in. You're not just a simple being where one act, one relationship is going to make you whole. You are a cluster of experiences and of relationships, not one. But you can follow major, major points in your life and see how many people it took to get you there and what you've done as a result of getting there. So now I'm going to take Annie Sullivan and I'm going to take Helen and I'm going to say, okay, here's the game plan, says the Lord of Necessity, the Guardian of Necessity. You're going to Helen. At age 18 months, you've got to get sick. You're going to lose your eyesight. We'll send you Annie. It'll happen when you're 7. The game plan's done. They get the script. We're going to give you great parents Helen, you're going to be born. They're fabulous. Two spirits come up. Meet your parents. This one's going to be Kate. This one's going to be the captain. Helen says, this is great. I'll see you. I'll be down in a few decades. And off they go. Helen's waiting. Pretty soon, Helen descends. What happened to choice? Well, necessity is destiny. These two are one and the same thing. But here comes choice. Choice says, look, what I'll do is this. I'm going to set up circumstances that are contracts. That's it. They are not negotiable. But you have a choice every time. And that choice is, how do you respond to a contract? How are you going to act it out? How are you going to integrate it? What are you going to do about it? How will you take charge? How will you relinquish? How will you be within certain setups? You will always, 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 always have choice. Now, it's an incredible thing to realize. It's so incredible, it's incredible. Imagine that you have a macrocosmic mind and you have a microcosmic mind. It's very easy to see the choices, to pick out the choices, to recognize the choices you make that are big in your life. I mean, like the choice of where to move, where to live, where to go to school, what job to take, who to marry, who to divorce. That's obvious. But, you know, these are big choices in life. They're not little. You don't realize the power of the little choices. You don't realize how tiny a choice might be to be kind to someone one day who might be desperate for one act of kindness, and that one act of kindness might have stopped that person from committing suicide. Now you think, well, Carolyn, that's a dramatic example. You want to know how many times I've heard that from people? Do you want to know how many times someone's come up to me in a workshop and said, if it wasn't for the fact that this person, I don't even know who this person was, said this person to me. If it wasn't for the fact that this individual came up to me and said something nice, I think I would have jumped off the bridge. Were they meant to meet? Yeah, I think so. Because you know what I think? I think that a person who had a contract to send hope, to be hope, was directed in some way to be with that person at that time. And that in that moment, there was an exchange of that precious energy of hope, and it made that person hang on. Now, you know, I think that there are, just to give you a sidebar, because I suspect you would ask me this right now, so I'm going to answer it right now. And that's, we do have contracts with individuals. And we also have contracts, like with this person, to be like Pied Pipers with our grace. In other words, anybody who had the contract with hope, with the grace of hope, could have served this woman. It could have been you, or it could have been someone else who had the gift of hope, the grace of hope. There is a level of contracts that play out just at that general human life level. But then we upgrade to the contracts of specific relationships and specific tasks. Okay, but back to what I was talking about, which is you have no idea of the power of everything you say. You haven't got a clue. And to that, I'm going to jump you right here into a sidebar once again. And I'm going to remind you that you are a student of human consciousness. You are someone that's incarnated to study the creative power of your spirit within the world of physical matter. That's why you're here. That's exactly why you're here. And your contract is the system, the thought forms, the organizational pattern within which you're going to study that. Now, part of the journey of becoming conscious is to learn how creative, how powerful each one of our perceptions and thought forms are. To take you backwards, just think about one perception, such as the word freedom. How freedom changed the world. That one word. That's not a big word, but it represents everything. Look at your thoughts, listen to your thoughts, become so ever mindful of your thoughts. This is part of your contract. Everyone you're with, everything you do, is a reflection in some way, shape, or form of what you should be learning about yourself and of your own creative power. From now on, think so very clearly that no matter where you are, no matter who you're with, every thought, every word, every energy you generate has the power to bring that person down or to raise that person up. Because you know what? That's truth. It sounds incredible, but it's truth. And I personally believe that we are so powerful that if we truly recognized how powerful a thought form is, we wouldn't let ourselves out of the house. No, really, I'm not being funny. We wouldn't let ourselves out of the house because we cannot manage our psyches yet. We cannot manage our psyches. We can't even manage our attitudes. We can't manage our spirits. We can't manage anything. And it's for that reason that we have contracts. We can't manage our lives. We have to have places to go and people to meet and schedules to keep because we are completely unmanageable. So it has to be scripted for us. Because left to our own devices, who knows what we do down there? So back we go, up the stairs, up, up, up. I have to assume you're following my wild way of teaching. You have to be, aren't you? All right. Up we go. We are back with the guardian of choice, back again with Helen Keller, Annie Sullivan. We're talking about choice. Now, once the spirit of Helen Keller descends and she becomes Helen Keller, she's really not going to remember this agreement. She's not going to remember that once upon a time, before she even came down, she agreed to give up to live in this way. That's where choice comes in. Choice says, you're not going to remember these things. So I am going to set up circumstances. Well, where does compassion come in? Here comes compassion. The guardian of compassion says this. I am always going to provide something in your life in every moment, in every second, that's going to remind you of the better choice. It will always be there. Something, somehow, will always be present in some way that will remind you of the better choice to make in every second in your life. Now, that's a phenomenal thing to say to you, but I'm telling you, it is absolute truth. And again, I'm going to say truth. Not true, it's true you're listening to this program, but truth, which means it's eternal. And that's that there is always, always, always a warning, an intuitive signal that something's about to reshape itself in your life. And in that intuitive signal, that's the energy of compassion coming through. That's the energy that says, look alive, look alive, look alive. It's time for you to sense change. Now, I am a fountain of intuitive babble, I suppose somebody would say, but intuitive information. I can't teach people enough to pay attention to that part of their psyche. There's no way I can. And part of the reason I am so enthused and passionate about it is because your intuitive system, that slight and delicate part of you, that subtle body that just surrounds and embraces you, that part of you is able to sense the guardian of compassion, that sense that says energy is now on the way of incarnating into physical matter. An energetic thought is vesseling through you into form. It's reshaping your life. Stop, sense it. Becoming conscious is all about sensing yourself and your life and your world at that level. Your contracts are all about sensing. You are in a contract with someone. For the sake of integrating your spirit, for the sake of heightening your awareness, for the sake of becoming a fuller spiritual being. This is why you have a contract with someone. You're there to help them create more for themselves, to enhance yourself. You have a contract in order to enhance human evolution, to be a part of the expansion of human consciousness. You make contracts to rebuild cities on this planet, rebuild life. You have contracts to set up healing centers or to set up businesses. You do. We do make contracts for all of this. And where compassion comes in, where all of these guardians come in, is that they establish parameters through which you accomplish these agreements. Compassion says, when you are about to make a choice, what is consciousness? It's that you become as conscious as you can about why you make the choices you do. 2, what you're responding to. 3, whether or not you're making a choice out of fear, out of what is your reason to act and make choices as you do. Contracts are setups for you to make choices. They are all setups. And the Lord of Necessity puts you into situations which will always, another difficult word, always and never, you know that, but will always, always, always contain one thing that you didn't see coming. One element, one rock in the road, one surprise. And by surprise, I'm not talking about one frightening thing. I'm talking about even an opportunity. Where did this piece of luck come from? It will contain one thing that you did not chart into it. And that one thought, phone call, person, accident, anything, that comes from your contract. And that right there, when the uncharted thing happens, right then, right there, even being delayed for your flight, like missing an airplane flight, that's not uncharted. That is very charted. You stop, and before turning into a wild person, I'm now talking to myself. What you do is you stop, and you say, this could be the most compassionate act in the world. This could be the guardian of compassion. I can now choose to respond to this with either wisdom or woe. I can say this is the worst thing, or I could say something's going on here. And then sense. Quiet yourself. Quiet yourself right away. Take a deep breath and go into yourself and think, where's the energy coming from? I've just been downloaded. Something's moving in my energy system. What is it? What do you feel? Go in and read your system because you're about to make a choice. You're about to make a choice. You can either decide this is awful, whoa, or you could say, I don't know what's going on. And you can quote, and here comes the big word. The big word I'm going to repeat several times, surrender. You can surrender and say, I don't know why this is happening. Maybe there's a reason. Maybe there's an agreement. I don't know. Maybe it was scripted. I haven't got a clue. I'm going to assume that it was. I'm going to take, here's the word you're going to use, the posture, that it is a contract. How can you possibly have a contract to be stopped by a train? It's not a train contract. Listen to me. It is a contract to be held in a speed zone, okay, until something else is ready for you to meet down the road. Let me put it this way. What if that was the day you were scheduled to meet somebody who was going to be extremely significant in your life? Extremely significant. Only you'd been speeding. And if you got to the place that fast, you'd miss him or her. You had to be slowed down. So you somehow or other were directed to take a street that a train was going to go over, and it slowed you down. You had to keep your scheduled appointment. These types of divine interferences, that's the guardian of compassion coming through saying, I'll help you out. It's a phenomenal arrangement that heaven makes for us. A phenomenal arrangement. Regardless of whether or not it makes sense, that it doesn't make sense is irrelevant. It's absolutely irrelevant. And this is a choice you get to make. You get to say to yourself, why do I need to know the reason this is happening right now in order for me to stay empowered? That's a choice. That's absolutely a choice. But by making that choice, you don't realize what you've done. You have no idea. And now I'm going to tell you what you've done. Let's say you have a contract. I'm going to set the stage for you. We're going to leave Helen on the side. We haven't forgotten her. Leave her right there. We'll be back, Helen. And let's go here. Let's go to something that's realistic in your life. Let me ground this. Let me take this down to the grounded grit level of life. Let's say that you're working at a job and you've given it a lot. You really are putting your time in. And they hire someone. And they hire someone for a job that you were going to have, or you thought you were going to have. Or you had another dream, and you got disappointed, and boy, you put in all of your energy, and how could that happen? How could that happen? Now, in that moment, you already have in your head, and I know that. I don't even have to look in your faces to know that. I know that each one of you already has in your head, in your mind, the thought form, things happen for the best. Even if I don't know why they happen for the best, I just have to trust. And it's because you believe that, that you have a choice of wisdom or woe in that moment. To rely upon what you believe, to say, wait a minute here. What if this is a contract? What if something about this moment was agreed to before I got here? What if I'm not supposed to have that job because something else is going on? What if that's true? I get to choose whether or not this is a contract, or whether or not I think that human being has the power to disrupt the whole of my life. Now, which one do I want? It almost sounds preposterous when you listen to me say it, doesn't it? What if you said, whoops, this is a contract, time to go, enjoy the job. Obviously, it wasn't for me. Let me take you out for lunch. I'm out of here. Now think just for a moment. If you made the negative choice and you decided, no, I'm going to resent, I'm going to be bitter, I'm going to be angry, I'm going to be all of that. Think, while knowing simultaneously that that's a negative way to respond, that that's completely anti what you claim to believe spiritually. Think about the decision you've just made. Do you see what I'm saying to you? Whereas what if you decided in that moment, I haven't got a clue why this is happening. I don't like it. It doesn't feel good. And as a matter of fact, it scares me. But I do have the option of thinking maybe I've agreed to this for some reason, and I don't know, I don't know the agreement, but what if I decided to play by those rules? I have a contract with this. I'm going to agree to that. It hurts, I'm frightened, but I'm going to play by those rules. This is called surrender. Now, let's return for the last time to Helen, and let me complete that for you. Once Helen incarnated, of course, you know that she became a phenomenal figure. She became an incredible figure. And that she and Annie met at age 7, when she was 7 years old, right on time. And through the years, of course, she learned to read Braille in multiple languages, and she became a writer, and of course, a tremendous healer, a planetary healer. She healed. She had a contract as a healer, and that's the shape it took. And she chose again and again and again to take the courageous response to a challenge that could in many ways have scared many people to the extent that they would have remained in their home hiding for safety, and not just scare her because of the vulnerability of not being able to feel your way in the outside world. But there was also a degree of shame and humiliation and all of that kind of embarrassment that she had to confront. This woman was brave. This soul was incredible. And compassion provided so much for her. It provided friends, Thomas Edison, Alexander Graham Bell. They loved her. Isn't that interesting that two people whose whole life was communication grabbed onto this woman? An interesting series of contracts. Compassion, again and again and again. Ways were found, methods were done, and Helen reached the world. This is how you look at a contract. As an agreement you make that always has elements of necessity to it. It always has elements of choice, and it always has the presence of compassion. Now, I wanted to take you up yet another notch because this is a very important introduction at this point. We're going to be talking in this program a great deal about archetypes. Archetypes and mythology. Mythology plays a tremendous role in your life, whether or not you realize it. Mythology, fairy tales, folklore. When I do readings on people, I can tell, for example, that they have an alignment to a certain fairy tale, that they're actually living aspects of that fairy tale. What an outrageous thing to say. Yes, it is outrageous. And you know what? If I take that fairy tale and sit down with them and I'll say, come here, Snow White, look at this. And you can see that they are truly living aspects. And there are 7 dwarfs in that person's life. And they may not be literal dwarfs, but there will be 7 helpers. Oh, yes, there will. And the outrageous reason the heavens, here is again the guardian of compassion, has set up folklore and mythology and such incredible stories, mythologies, is because they serve as a type of magnetic spiritual path. All right? And what that means is they get you to where you're going because you don't know where you're going. And these mythologies, these contracts, what it does is it kind of locks in a certain way that you roll through your life. And the more conscious you become of yourself and of the power of your choices, the more consciously you can write the endings to these fairy tales. Are you with me on this? Okay. So upgrade we go. And when I was looking into a larger perspective on contracts, I discovered that the Romans and the Greeks had a god named Mithras, a very famous god, the Greeks. And Mithras was called the god of contracts. And they believed, and it was understood, that before you incarnated, you had a conversation with Mithras, and Mithras handed you a task. And more or less, the understanding was, don't come back here unless that's done, or until that's done. And it was completely understood that your birth was no accident, that it was a divine command, a divine purpose, that it was completely divinely ordered, and that you had to live a life accepting every day as essential to the whole of your contract, that it just wasn't one task to reduce the purpose and significance of your life to one action that might happen sometime when you're 41 years old is preposterous. The whole of your life is a contract. And this perception of incarnating and making agreements is older, or is as old and as far back as we go, which means somehow there is truth to it. We do make agreements. We are on assignments here, and we aren't with each other for casual reasons. Now I want to share with you something that's absolutely delicious, and that's that there is a myth about a place called the River of Forgetfulness. And you're meant to take a drink from this river before you incarnate. Now, this river is mythologically known. It's recognized. The same cultures, the Greeks, that had Mithras, had this river. They knew somehow that once you got your assignment, that it wasn't permitted that you incarnate fully aware of your assignment, because then the test didn't count. Nothing counted. Then why bother going down? It would be too easy. You would not be able to face your own polarities. It would be too simple. I did two readings in the whole of my career in which two people told me, and these people didn't know each other, so I want to emphasize that. These two people told me identical stories about how they ran, jumped over this river because they just didn't want to do it. They didn't want to drink from the river. And they flew over it and descended into physical life without having followed orders. And as a result, here's one story. One man said he never became consciously prepared for the limitations and parameters of human life. Rather, his psyche has remained huge. Now, he said that he had full memory of being in his mother's womb and of waiting to be born, and how horrible it was waiting 9 months to get out. He said that he remembered the birth canal. He said that he remembered that he was a very alive, alert, old being in a new body. Well, of course, we're all old being. What kind of news is that? The only thing that's changing is we're finally recognizing that children are conscious. It's not that they're suddenly old beings, it's that our light bulbs have gone on. But he said that he was limited by the limitations of a little body. He couldn't make it talk at 6 months, even though he could hear at the level of an adult. So he described these years of being miserably frustrated and incredibly unhappy. But the worst part for him was that he knew that by not going into this deep state of human unconsciousness, of allowing his unconscious to put the veil on, he had prevented himself from having choice in his life. He'd taken it away. And choice is perhaps the most profound power we have in life. In fact, it is, from my point of view, the core power, even greater than the power of love, because to love is a choice. Now, your contracts in life are all of them, each one of them. They are meant to increase that sense of awareness as to who you are, as to how powerful you are, as to the creative force you are, as to how powerful each one of your thoughts is, how incredible life is, and how much of value every task you have to do in life is. So, as we explore contracts further in this program, I want you to hold in your mind the perception that absolutely everything you've ever done and everything you're doing is of value. I want you to hold in your mind the fact that it's very difficult for you to hold in your mind yourself. The majority of you is rarely in your body. Most of you, all the time, is anywhere but in the moment. You're either in your past, or you're worrying about something that's other than the now. You're worrying about the future. You're anywhere but in the moment. And because you're anywhere and everywhere but in the moment, you devalue the value of the moment. And that's why you can't see the contract being played out in the moment or the significance of it. That's why you eclipse the value of what's going on in this minute in your life. As we continue, the assignment that I want you to hold, what I want you to do, is stay as much in present time as you listen to this program as you can. And when you feel yourself slipping, note that. Stop the program and start again. Note when you start slipping, because that's going to show you how little attention you pay to your own life. And this is why you have contracts. Because left to your own psyche, who knows where you'd be.
This concludes Session 1 of Sacred Contracts with Carolyn Mace. Our program continues with Session 2.